How was that as a first experience?
It was fantastic. Because when you do the voice originally, 2 years ago when I started, I had nothing to look at. I didn't know what the character looked like. I didn't really know what the film would look like. And so we're really creating the drama with just me and the girl who played Kaylee. And they filmed us while we were doing it. They videoed us so that they could see our expressions. And it's amusing to watch because they really captured a lot of my expressions. And the character looks slightly like me, I think. Well, there was a filming camera. The animators were filming us. So, you know, it's relaxing because you know you're going to do it lots of times until it's exactly right. So you're sort of taking samples of how it works. And they were wonderful because they let me try all kinds of different things. So I do some of them more intense than others and some of them lighter than others.
Did you have to change the voice or did it evolve during the...
It was the same voice. In fact, what's interesting for anyone who ever watches me on film is that most of the time you hear me speak American, so this is probably one of those very rare occasions that my real voice was audible. Of course, I love the way Celine Dion sings to me. That was nice. That was a real plus.
So when they had you on camera while you were doing the voice, did they incorporate your gestures into the character? Or?
Yes, what they do is, and I could see it, that sometimes when I was reading, I would, you know, say something and then there'd be a way I would look or a gesture, and definitely, I mean, they used a lot of my gestures and the way my face moves.
In the movie, you play the mother and the daughter who's united, you feel the two
I mean, let me just tell you that I did this for no other reason than that I have kids and I love really good animated movies. And when I read this, I've always loved the Arthurian legends. I've always wanted to do something to do with the Arthurian legends, and I've been asked before to play Guinevere and stuff like that. So the idea of doing something that's mass market that will actually allow kids to say, I love this, and the parents can then say, well, by the way, there are lots of books and stories about King Arthur that are really, you know, basic literature and marvelous legends. It's actually a great educational tool too. And the idea of having a young girl who dares to be herself rather than who she's expected to be. I mean, she wants to be a knight, she wants to make a difference, she wants to help. And I think the great part is the mother, for me and the mother, is that she allows her daughter to go off and do it. I mean, it's only a small element, obviously, of the story, but I think it's pretty powerful. How many people, mothers in particular, have teenage daughters that want to go out, and they're not going to slay dragons, are they? But they want to go out and party all night, and they want to go to college on the other coast, or they want to leave the country, or they want to leave home. You know, this was an interesting exercise in how they cut the umbilical cord, and how the mother trusted and prayed for and hoped the daughter would make the choices that would be right for her and to help everybody, and how proud she was that her daughter was able to do that. At the same time, wanting to hold her and keep her there and protect her. So there was an interesting dynamic there, you know, even in its small way. And then, of course, Gareth, I think it's lovely, you know, it's a very unlikely hero, a man who's blind, who doesn't believe he belongs in that world, and then realizes that he, you know, sees and is very instrumental in saving Camelot. Not yet. I'm going to take them next week, and I wasn't going to take the babies, but now that I've seen it finished, I saw it yesterday, and I saw a lot of two-year-olds watching it, and they weren't scared at all. They loved it. So I'm definitely taking my babies. I'm taking the whole lot.
What's the age span of your children?
It's unbelievable. I have twins of 2 years and 4 months. Then I have a 12-year-old son. The twins are boys. Then I have a 12-year-old son, Sean, 16-year-old daughter, Katie, 17-year-old stepdaughter, Jenny, who's with us most of the time, and my stepson is 21, and he's at USC Film School right now, and he's just written his first feature that's going to be made this year. So, it's an interesting group. Well, we let them go, but they seem to have come back, you know? Yes, it's... it's a very interesting household we have. It's very busy and very creative, and we do a lot of things together. My priority in life is my kids, and one of the reasons I did this is I wanted to do something that I could be proud of for my kids. Another reason why I do Dr. Quinn too.
And how about your girl back there? Do you yourself?
Oh, that's a girl? Oh yeah, actually, my daughter is a lot like Kaylee. In fact, her name's Katie, and I kept wondering why they called. It's interesting because my son is called Kaylin, which is a Celtic name, and my daughter's called Katie. My husband's son is called Kaylin, and his name is Kaylin James, and my daughter is Katie Jane. And, you know, we were not naming our children when we knew each other, but it's interesting because Kaylin and Katie, if you mix them together, it's Kaylin. It's a beautiful name. No, I'm half Dutch and half English, with a bit of Polish blood thrown in.
Talking about being helpful, lastly, you were telling me about your upcoming project.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I start next week. I'm going to Winnipeg to star in a movie for CBS Television, the Sunday night movie called Marriage of Convenience. James Brolin is playing the male lead, and Shirley Knight is playing my mother. And it's a wonderful romance, and James Keach, my husband, is directing it. And then after that, I'm supposed to play Fanny Kemble, which is for Showtime, which will be a feature in the rest of the world. It's about a true story about an actress in the 1800s who married an American and ended up fighting slavery. So wonderful, wonderful piece. We're getting the script any day now. I'm supposed to tuck that in before I go back to Dr. Quinn, if they pick us up, which they think they will. We've written some children's books, which they were looking at. The animators here wanted to see, but I haven't them here. If you're interested, these are the children's books. James and I wrote them, and a friend of ours from England, who I've known since I was 16, did the cartoons. Putnam is publishing these and Four Little Baby Books in October. Film Roman is making the animated movie of it, and I'm actually in the book. I mean, I play Lady Jane, who's the mother of these kittens. The kittens are based on, they're called this one and that one, and they're based on the twins. And this one and that one and the Malibu cats. And, you know, that's James here trying to wash the babies, and this is me, my animated cat version. And everyone seems to love these things, and we're making a movie which will come out hopefully within a month or two of the books coming out. So they all have one word titles: yum, splat, boing, but they're about these kittens. And they call this one and that one because when they were in my tummy, we always refer to them as, you know, this one seems bigger than that one, and, you know, this one kicks more than that one, and then they were born, this one has more hair than that one. And then when they started running around, you know, you take this one, I'll get that one. This one went that way and that one went the other way. So the name this one and that one clicked, and then we thought it'd be kind of fun to do semi-autobiographical stories for families and for kids about the cats, the Malibu cats. So now, having worked on Quest all the way through this, I was writing the books and, you know, picking their brains and saying, well, what do you think? And they'd never seen it. They knew I was talking about it. I just showed it to them at lunch, and they're really excited about it. They really like it. So I've been, you know, learning something about animation. I wasn't wasting my time doing Quest because I was just, you know, picking their brains and, you know, watching how it's done by the masters.
But besides that, personally, did you learn something?
Yes.
Yes,
I did. I mean, one thing I know that we'll do with our project is, once we have a finished script, I'm going to hire a bunch of actors to sit around the table and read it, and then I will not read myself. I'll just close my eyes and listen to it so I can hear it as a radio play before we go into, because when you do animation, they can't edit it very well. It's edited as they film. It's not like film where you do lots of takes and then you can change it. It doesn't work that way. Much harder. You have to really make your decisions early on.
When did you get involved in this project, and how is it, as far as the time you put into it? I mean, it's been going on for quite a few years, and you've
involved. I was involved about 2 years ago. I think contractually I was only supposed to show up a couple of times, but I came in and did work on it at least 6 times. One reason was that they changed the name of the character, so everything I'd done originally had to be changed because she was, I can't remember what the original name was, but it wasn't Kaylee. Oh yes, Lynette. Well, I prefer Kaylee, and obviously it was my collection. Couldn't have chosen a better name. So I came in, and then I actually asked to come in and see the whole film finished. when they were doing what they call the looping, you know, they added the last lines, bits and pieces. I wanted to see it finished with my primal voice to see if I liked the performance, and they allowed me to come and do that. And then I had some other readings I wanted to try, and I threw those in, and I think they used some of them. But it helped me to see the whole movie and my whole performance in there, and so I did a bit more than I was supposed to do. But I wanted it to be good. So.
Obviously very hard working mom. We work for Kids Magazine, which helps parents who are bringing up their children. Do you have any tips for working moms?
Yeah. Well, first of all, make sure you have really good support help if you're working. I think, you know, in retrospect, having worked and taken my children with me and done both, my children have a definite desire to achieve for themselves. They know that working is something that they get excited about. They know that mom and dad really enjoy their work, and that in our case it's very creative. And I think they see that working hard at school pays off, because then, you know, they have the opportunity to pursue their dreams. I think they see an enthusiasm and a joy for work, because we're all going off and working. And they don't feel like they've been deserted. I've often asked my kids, would you prefer if I quit and was a full-time mom and, you know, took you to and from school and managed to attend every ball game and the rest of it? And they say no. But of course they don't know any better, do they? But tips, I think it's well, you know, you always hear quality and rather than quantity. I think introducing your children to what it is that you love in life, what you're passionate about, including them in that. And if that happens to your work, more, you know, even better, because then they can become passionate about their work, which originally of course is school. And you know, I take my kids everywhere with me. They're always with me. It's this one and that one. These guys are completely crazy. You physically have to have more than one set of hands for 2 2-year-olds, I mean. So I have extra hands, but even still, they still slip through and slip out. It's tough, but they grew up on movie sets. The first word that ever came out of their mouth was cup.
As 2 year-olds, how aware are they of what it is exactly you do?
Well, the other day, I hadn't realized I'd never shown them Dr. Quinn. And I guess Dr. Quinn was on a rerun, and it was accidentally the TV was on, and so they were going like this, and they looked behind to see if I was still there. They couldn't quite work out that I was there and there. But they've seen me on TV and on other things, or on the Gerber ad, which they're in with me. So, but I'm wondering how whether they'll realize that I'm maybe Juliana.
You said that you were 4 months old,
yeah,
and you signed out and sold out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, when, as far as the book and the decision that you wanted to create these animated books, was that something you wanted to do before you signed out for the animated feature?
Yes, we'd already started writing the books before I did the animated feature, and we didn't realize that the books were going to take off so much and that they'd become a movie.
Right.
But we're obviously thrilled.
And that was sort of part of the direction you wanted. Have you ever been involved in animated feature before?
No.
But as far as deciding on the movie, like, did you make a 2 years ago, that something that you're tossing around?
When I decided to request the camera, I was thinking of nothing but the idea of doing something on a subject matter that appealed to me. I thought it was a lovely role, and having lots of kids, I wanted to do something that they could watch and enjoy and that I could be proud of. Plus, I feel, you know, that a large part of my audience is family and kids. And I thought this was very well worth doing.
So, as far as, you know,
this is separate.
It's completely separate.
It has nothing to do with it. No, I only have this because I had lunch with the animation
team. I thought maybe you perhaps also wanted to learn more about the creation of an animated feature.
Well, now.
Put one out, but was it during the time?
No, I had no idea that I was thinking of doing that. We were writing the books at that stage. But then, as I was working with them, I talked to them about it, and of course they were showing me how it was done and
right,
how they went about it. I did actually see some of the animation being done for Lion King a long time ago at Disney when I was being taken around, and some of the same people who did that are now here at Warner Brothers, so some of the similar faces that I'd seen before. And I paint for fun, so anything to do with art or colour or images and faces, I love what I do in my own spare time.
Your role on Dr. Quinn is a very strong actor, and I'm going to tell you.
I think this movie is telling a young girl that she can be whoever she wants to be, and she has permission to be the best Kaylee she can be, and if that means helping to find the sword. She's also, as you can see, very supportive of the man in her life. She's not taking over from him. And I think that there's it's very interesting to see them as a pair. You don't see the boy just protecting the girl, which is what's normal. You see the two of them equally pursuing the need and facing the danger together, and uniquely in their own different ways, fighting off the demons and achieving their goal. But they're working together as a team, as equals. I think that's what makes this difference. And children are very impressionable. I think when young boys see that a young girl can be smart enough to help find the sword, and that she isn't a victim, and she isn't crying all the time, and he isn't sort of a lame duck. I love the Celine Dion song too, don't you? The Mother's Prayer. So beautiful. I don't know if you've heard the whole song. They only have part of it in the movie, but it's worth listening to the whole song. It's just beautiful. Celine?
Yeah.
No, unfortunately not. But David Foster, who did the music, is one of my oldest friends, and he's a neighbor of mine. And he told me he'd written this song, and at one point they weren't going to have it in the movie. So he was going to send it to me so I could sing it privately. He said, I wrote a song for you. Then when he told me, no. I mean, I can sing. I used to sing, but now I...
Did they ask you to sing?
No. And if they had, they do ask me to sing from time to time, but I usually say no, because I think Celine does a much better job. I do plenty.
That was your movie last time?
I went to watch Quest for Camelot, finished, and I saw it with an audience, and interestingly enough, I saw it with a lot of small kids. You know what my unique reaction I got was, I realized that I was in the movie a lot more than I remembered being in it. And that's because even though I don't speak a lot of the time, my character is there reacting to all the things that are happening. And really, a large part of the arc of the story is, what's going to happen to Lady Juliana? Will she be safe? Will she get there? Will there be danger in Camelot if they believe it's her and then she lets all those bad guys in? Will she be hurt? And will her daughter survive? I mean, she really does go through the whole movie, and I think I hadn't really realized how big a part it ultimately was, even though vocally it wasn't that big.
What's the casting for that? Was they contacted just you, or were there many actors?
I just got a call. Would you do this? For nothing.
What were some of the favorite animated features of your children?
Gosh, Lion King, of course, is a huge favorite in the household. 101 Dalmatians, Snow White, Bambi. Wakes you up every time Ma dies, And I really love the classic animated films, and the kids have seen most of them. I saw Anastasia the other day, so I thought, it was good. I think I like this one better. This one appeals on all levels. I think it appeals to older people, and it appeals to small kids. And I was very interested to see that it held a two-year-old's attention. I mean, I grew up with the Flintstones, in England. That was, and since my middle name was Wilma, it was sort of a thought of.
You travel a lot. Where was your favorite place?
Gosh. Well, I love where we live, but I am very happy in my home in England. So we have a beautiful 1,000-year-old house right in the area where the Arthurian legends come from, in Bath, in the beginning of the Cotswolds. So. There's a sort of magic to that area, and I have a home there and have done for 16 years. other than that, I love traveling. I love meeting people all over the world. I've been to India. That was a very special experience for me. And China, before they opened the war, you know, the gates. So I've traveled all over the world. I was in Yugoslavia just before the war with my children. That was devastating because it was the most beautiful country you could ever imagine. And the day after I left, it's just gone.
Are your children?
Oh, yes. I'm an ambassador for UNICEF worldwide. I went to El Salvador last year for them, which was amazing. I've always worked in children's charities uniquely. I've been the international ambassador for Child Help USA, Stop Child Abuse, for many years. I have also got my own personal charity in Los Angeles that I work on called City Heart that provides free art programs to kids on Skid Row and kids who are first-time delinquents. In fact, it's become now used as a probation service. They sentence children to our project. By some offenders. And when I went to El Salvador for UNICEF, they were particularly interested in the project that we were doing downtown LA. Because a lot of the problems we have in El Salvador now that UNICEF is addressing are the gangs. And they're the same gangs with the same names from LA, from Santa Monica, that are now transplanted because they were kicked out of America and they've gone to El Salvador and they're functioning right there. It's scary. And I am a great believer that the most important thing you can do for kids is give them a sense of self-esteem. And it's important to feed them and inoculate them and put a roof over their head and give them some education. But if you don't give them a sense of self-worth and a sense of wanting to do something for themselves and believing in themselves, you know, then the rest of it is, you know, immaterial. So the projects that those are the ones I mainly work on. And I also work with Christopher Reeve for the foundation he's set up, because he's a very good friend of mine. And I think finding a cure for spinal injuries is rather, you know, it's been a long time coming. So I'm helping them out. In fact, these books, when they come out, 10% of our profits is going to be split between Child Help USA, the Child Abuse Agencies, and Christopher Reeve.
Did you talk to Christopher Reeve as far as
his
involvement?
I think he chose not to do it. I think, yes. I think, you know, they asked him, and I know that's true, because they asked him to do it, and I persuaded him to do it, and the deal, I think, was that he said if he felt good about how it worked, then that would be okay, but he didn't feel good about it. And at that time when they were recording, I know he'd only just really come to... I mean, that was, can you imagine not being able to breathe? I mean, it's bad enough to speak, but when you're waiting for a machine to give you your next breath, it's very hard. I mean, in real life, you can talk and you can have wonderful long conversations with him. And obviously, he's one of the top speakers in the country now. And I think he's the second most demanded public speaker after Colin Powell. So I think he just felt this was not really the right meeting there. And I saw Kaylee whenever I recorded. Kaylee was around, not all the time, but most of the time. And then for Ruben, they had someone else come in, another voice, not the one that you hear, but somebody else, so I could interact with them. It's different, but I did a lot of radio when I was younger in England. I used to do a lot of radio drama, and I read a lot of books for tape. So, and I've done lots of documentaries and voiceover work, so I'm used to doing voice. You know, you have to come up with the same emotions if you're doing it vocally as if you were being filmed. And you don't just say it. I mean, and when they don't see your face, it's an even more important that your voice reflects the things that you can't show, which is your body.
Do you feel like you're putting yourself in the hands of the animators when you let the recording go and then they're giving you facial expressions and they're doing your characters?
I feel they've created the character, and then the interesting thing was I thought I just then did the voice, but actually didn't really work out that way. I think they took my character and my performance and animated to some degree to that. They already had a preconceived idea of how they wanted to imagine us to be, but I think that however I played it definitely influenced the animation. I mean, they told me it did so.
Like other classic animated features, you know, like the Lion King, feel the loss of a parent. You know, even though it's too late, you feel that children are too young to really address this issue. But a traumatic scene, just like those other stuff.
Well, in real life, traumatic things happen to people all the time, and I think if you can put it in an animated, in a movie or in a Dr. Quinn or in some way that there is some solution, growth, and love that goes on for that person that's passed on, I think that's a wonderful gift to be able to give a child, so that they know that if they do lose a parent or they do lose a friend, that they understand what the grieving process is about. And I think it's shown beautifully here. You know, she grieves her father's death, but that doesn't stop her from living. That makes her want to live and fly on her father's wings. I think it's such a wonderful, you know, idea, because her father's presence has inspired her to become the young woman she wants to be.
Do you plan to make something animated on Scrooge?
No, it's very impressive. Avebury is even more impressive. Avebury, which is the other thing like Stonehenge, and much less commercialized. And if you go out to England, that's the place to go. Oh, it's amazing. It is beautiful.
Thank you.